Mr. Cotrielto, what was Glasgow expected to do in support of the D-Day landings off Omaha Beach, please?
We did the, before the landings went in, we did the bombardment. We had to take out, we had a big map, one of these contour maps laid out in the hangar. They used to carry planes on board, but they were no longer there. And we had this big contour map showing where we were going in, and it looked like we had to take out some gun emplacements which were just above, on the cliffs, home on our beach. So the bombardment before the landing took part. I don't think, you can't remember all of that. I suppose we were so active. It was just early morning and still dark, sort of thing, just the dawn coming. And then shortly after that, when you could see a bit more, we were surrounded by the transports coming in. And most of the Americans were being... We're going down the nets, family nets on the side of the transport into the landing grass to go off. And of course, as history knows, the Omaha Beach, the Americans got bogged down on it. And so we were off there, for 2 or 3 days, giving support. And then we went to Sherbrooke.
Were you aware that the Americans were in difficulties?
Oh, yes. All information was relayed to us. Everybody knew what was going on. Oh, yes, there was a tremendous amount of information coming back about what was going on. It was coming over the channel system in the ship. We were kept well informed of what was going on.
What was your own action station at D-Day?
I was a floating member doing any odd thing. But one time I was given a 16mm Kodak camera and about 4 magazines and told to go up on one of the spotted tops and take a panoramic view of what was going on. I did, but I don't know the results. Never saw the magazines or anything after that. I think they were given all out ad lib to all the ships and various places. I had no idea what that took.
So you were recording the landings?
Well, in that area, of course, yes. The boats going in and things like that. But how much you'd have picked up, I don't know. It was only an ordinary, these Kodak 16mm cameras that you fit that magazine in. I shouldn't have think there was an awful lot picked up. I took some photographs myself, but unfortunately they've all been lost to something which happened afterwards.
How impressive was the Allied effort at Omaha?
Very, very impressive. There's been lots of stories about... I think the Americans were very, very unfortunate that they got that initial bog down. It's very difficult to overcome. I think they were suffering fairly heavy casualties.
You said the ship went to Cherbourg.
Afterwards, we went to Cherbourg and bombarded Cherbourg. And while we were off there, we were hit by the we were hit twice. I think 2 shells were just from the batteries ashore. So again, back for repairs.
Where did they hit strike the ship?
One of the, I think think, just underneath Wychurch. One shell, I don't know where the other one went. Casualties were very light. I don't think there was anyone killed. It just wouldn't be.
Which was the more shaking experience, the torpedo hit on the Ramillies or the Shaw battery hit on the Glasgow?
I said the shelling. Definitely. Seemed to make, well, of course, don't forget, different type of ship. Ramillies was a big, heavy battleship. Very solid. Most of it underwater, I should say, anyway. Whereas Glasgow was a light cruiser. More upper works, more topsides. So I think anything that happened, it was there was more shaking about.
Where were you at the time the ship was hit?
I was just in the one of the mid flats aft. So I probably nipped outside. He just engaged. You know? Can't remember all the details now. It's just a long time ago, you know.
Any other things that happened to you in the Glasgow that
you can recall? No, not at all, really. I came off that ship. And as you see, I spent some time in barracks and then transferred into the police.
Which ship did you prefer, the Glasgow or the Ramillies?
The Ramillies, definitely. Oh, yes. Yes, it was the first ship. A lot of older men on board. Very happy ship.
Was Glasgow not a happy ship?
Oh, Glasgow was a happy ship, yes, but not the same type. Oh, also, don't forget, different. I went to Glasgow, just more or less all I saw from Glasgow was the D-Day landings. I haven't been with the ship for any other time. So, really, I'm no person to make a judgment. That's just my personal point of view.
You weren't in any of the V-weapons attacks in Britain, were you?
Pardon?
The V-weapons, V1s and V2s, you weren't in any of those attacks in Britain?
Not in the UK, no.
How did you come to be in the Prevost unit?
Before I went to Glasgow, I'd returned to the barracks to transfer to Fleet Air Arm. But I'd missed the course and was being put down for special service. And when I came off Glasgow, they said that people who had volunteered for special service was being requested to transfer to the Royal Marine Police, which would be informed by Provost Company, which would be informed. So I said, righto, fair enough, and I went down to we went down to Limpston in Devon, where we did the training.
Did you go abroad with them?
I went after doing an initial training period there. I took a section or a subsection up to Ripon and joined up with the 116th Brigade, which was being formed to go over to Northwest Europe. So we went over there. Must have been the latter part of the year. And went over, landing in Belgium, and went up into Holland to join up with our people who landed at Walsham and coming up through the miles that way. So while we were there, the police duties were on there. They were so diverse that we stayed with them all the way through to crossing the Rhine. And at the end of the war, we were just outside of Hamburg in a place called Buxtehude.
Did you get involved in any action?
Oh yes, yes, quite a number of times. We, our duties were quite varied. We were expected to do a whole range of duties, really, from marshalling the convoys on the road and point duty to when we went into over in, well, in Holland still as well, we were collecting information to do with the various crimes that have been committed, and also trying to gain all the service records and any information we could. I can't really go into too much detail of that without sort of thinking of it and writing it down.
What kind of crimes were the Royal Marines committing at that time?
No, it wasn't the Royal Marines crimes, it was the crimes connected with the collaborators. Don't forget, we were more or less adopting the role of trying to. When we bypassed, after the crossing of the Rhine, we bypassed near Hanover, we bypassed by Belsen. And part of the duties there, we were told to try and find the number of the guards who used to be there. We were also going into the various military quarters that were being overrun, predominantly to collect the records, the German records, so that they could be parcelled up and examined and seen what information was available. There was lots of things we were asked to do.
How much success did you have in tracing the Belsen guards?
The apprehension of them mainly. They were quite good names in circulation, but they were still being discovered quite a few months after the end of the war. I mean, don't forget, a large number of them to start with ditched their uniforms and became displaced people, and it wasn't until they were examined carefully that it came to light who they were. I suppose a hell of a lot of them got away, but some were apprehended.
Did you personally apprehend any of the Belsen guards?
Oh, yes, yes. They were arrested and passed over to the field intelligence people.
Can you describe any of the incidents where you apprehended them?
Not really, no. I can't think. It's just one of those things. You were so busy. I don't think people can clarify what happened. I mean, I can remember sort of when we were up in the going through Germany, there were places we went to where you went through in a jeep, and where you looked either side, you couldn't see anything. It was flattened. I mean, whole small towns and villages were flattened if they were in the way of advance. I mean, roads were practically non-existent when you went through some of these towns, where all the buildings had fell into the roads, and the only way through was for the tanks with the things in the front to go along and try to clear a road to go through. I mean, it was chaotic. I mean, the war was, well, I wouldn't say it was over, they didn't know, but I mean, everybody was racing through Germany as fast as they could.
It would sound to me as though it would be an almost impossible job to find those guards who were at Belsen.
More or less impossible. It's just luck if you happen to grab hold of someone. You see, don't forget, all German prisoners of war were marshalled into camps. In fact, it's unbelievable, but we didn't even take their arms off them. There was no need to, because they'd packed up. They were packing up in those archer days. And of course, you'd be surprised how easy it was for a German to turn round and say he was one of the guards in that camp. Most of the information you got was from other Germans, because they detested those people as much as you did. Well, I think most of the guards were apprehended and on the say-so from being turned in by their own people.
Did they resist when you found them?
No, very few did. No.
Would they deny it when you apprehended
them? Oh, yes, they all denied it. Yes, definitely. No one admits to something that they did. No.
Was it an unpleasant job for you?
Sure.
Was it an unpleasant job doing that type of thing?
No, I don't think so, no. I mean, 2 minutes or half hour or so after you've done that, you're probably doing something else. I mean, it's... I'm getting rather confused here. No, it's difficult.
You had a variety of things to do.
Yes. I think you did something in the morning, and by the afternoon you forgot what you had done. You know, I mean, there were so many things to do at that time.
What happened to you at Buxtehude?
At Buxtehude, we took over the marshal and mainly of the German prisoners of war. But then we were faced with a very, very serious problem of all the displaced people. You see, as well as the Germans had brought in large numbers of labour in the fields, nearly all the farms and the small factories were being run by this sort of slave labour. There was a lot of it about. So we ended up with thousands, basically, of displaced people, mainly of Slavic origin, who were just milling around, didn't know what to do. So we had to organise. We had one place we organised near Buxtehude, which was a big school building. We turned it into dormitories. And we thought, oh, that's all right. And before we knew where we were, we had about 20,000 displaced people there. Now, of course, you were trying to... You were having to grab hold of everybody you could so that you could start making records to find out who these people were. And then the other important thing is trying to feed them. There was no food available, so again, that was another problem. Feeding. And at that time, anyone who was in that area in Germany, in the northern parts, will tell you that one of the biggest problems you had was typhus. Typhus was rampant. I mean, we were being inoculated about every 10 days, you know, having a jab for it. And there was no spare. I mean, people were dying all over the place. I mean, it was a terrible time, and it took about 2 or 3 months to sort of get on top of it.
How were the displaced persons behaving towards the Germans?
I think they were only interested in staying alive. There was very little. We had no real trouble as such. It was just purely a question of having the people knowing who they were, feeding them and trying to find out who they were. I mean, as far as I know, a lot of them obviously should have been going back to places like Russia and Czechoslovakia and Poland. Whether they made it, I don't know. I mean, we were only concerned at that time that the large numbers of people who had to be fed had to have some form of medical attention. And of course, as time went on, more and more people got involved. But in the early stages, right at just after the end of the war, the people who were taking the brunt of it were people like ourselves and the police and anybody who were able to involve in that problem.
Did you catch anything yourself?
No, I was very fortunate. No, we were in, physically, we were ourselves, we were in very good condition.
Do you have any VE Day memory? Did anything special happen to you on VE Day?
Not really. No, we more or less knew about it the day before. Because we'd been down, you see, Lunenburg Heath, where the treaty was signed, was not all that far away from where we were. And we knew all about this being involved a good 24 hours before the official VE Day. So when it came, I think it was just, I think everybody knew it was happening. It was the end of the time.
Any VJ Day memory?
Yes, VJ Day, I was back in London, you see, and I was very pleased to hear VJ Day. Actually, I was very fortunate. I had a motorbike at the time, and I was at Chelsea Barracks, and VJ Day, I nipped away and went to Luton. So I don't know anything that happened in about these celebrations at all. I was on my way to get a crafty day's leave.
You were apprehensive that you might have to go to fight the Japanese?
We came back. We were earmarked to go out the Far East. That's why we came back to London.
Now, I think in September 45, you were in Hamburg.
Yes.
What were you doing there? What was your job?
Well, when I went to Hamburg, I took over the Hamburg Detachment of Police.
Of the Royal Marines Police?
That was the Royal Marines Police, yes. Number 36A, Wilhelmstrasse.
What kind of work did you have to do in Hamburg?
Patrol work mainly, looking after the conduct of the Allied personnel, and also to do with the black market and various things that were going on.
Were you there for a number of years?
There till 1948.
What did the black market consist of?
Oh, everything. Everything from lorries, cars, cigarettes, mainly cigarettes, coffee and things of that nature. But a lot of people, I mean, there's cars, for argument's sake, if you could get hold of it, a good car, you could get it down to Holland or Belgium or something of that nature, worth a fortune. Also, to cigarettes and things of that nature were the exchange rate. And people in the black market could get jewellery, works of art. There's no end of it.
But were they selling goods which belonged to them or selling goods which were stolen?
Stolen goods were changing hands for things of value. There was a lot of stealing going on. Also, too, in the early days, don't forget, food was a terrible short supply. And there was a lot of food coming into the British Armed Forces, which was being transferred into works of art, jewellery, cameras, watches. Which were accepted by a lot of people as being legal, and you know, you could have it because it was completely wrong. Well, now we had a case of the armed forces impounded a lot of equipment, and at Willem's Island, Parliament Street, they set up a sailing club. There was quite a number of yachts, very valuable commodities, which had been impounded from the original owners for use of the Allied Yachting Club. I mean, one case I can call to mind is that we had information received that one of the boats was on its way to the UK. Well, we got it stopped, and the people concerned obviously were put under charge. But the main point about the whole lot was this, that this particular boat in this particular instance was owned by a very influential German who, you see, not all Germans are bad, actually. He was the managing director of the Opel car company. And, you know, he knew his boat had been impounded, but he expected that when things had calmed down, it would be returned to him. He would be most annoyed if it disappeared. So, you see, it wasn't a question of appeasing the Germans or anything else. It was just plain fair with them at times. There was many a case where we had to be more or less on the side of the German and against our own people. There was one particular instance there. Currency, too, was a big black market. An English pound note was worth a lot of money. The American dollar was worth a lot of money. And we had one case, a normal traffic check on the Elbe Bridge. By one of the patrols. Two cars were stopped, papers were not in order, and on examination, suitcases in the boots were found in the same currency. They were obviously brought back to the headquarters, all checked over, and we found that there was suspicion that it was concerned with the Yugoslav royalists at the time. And when the money was counted, or at least roughly counted, we estimated it was somewhere in the region of about £2 million.